This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser episode number, oh gosh, I don't know what episode number it
149.
is. 149!
Awesome.
We are in the future. I am Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And we are joined today in a special Google Hangout by author Nick Kaufman. Welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure. It's really great to meet you guys.
Now, earlier we were comparing messy offices, and I think I win this fight, Nick.
I hid mine with Lem.
I'm glad we let you win.
Yes, yeah, so this will be an audio podcast and also a Google Hangout. So unfortunately, you audio podcast listeners will have to go watch the YouTube video after the fact to see how messy and awful my office has gotten.
It's a great tease. Yeah.
It is a great tease.
Of course, for the people just listening on the podcast, is gorgeous and pristine.
Yeah, Tom looks like he's in a frickin' TV studio, as usual.
That's because I'm in a TV studio.
That's because he's in a TV studio.
Tom, where are you coming in from?
My basement, but it's built as my podcasting studio, so I'm in L.A.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And where are you based out of, Nick?
Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, fabulous. I was just in New York this past week for New York Comic Con.
How'd it go?
It was fantastic. It was a lot
Good.
Of fun, and I miss the East Coast.
I was very sick this weekend and couldn't go.
I know. For our What Are We Drinking segment tonight, I am drinking green tea, and Nick is drinking tea
Black
as well.
Tea.
Black tea. And Tom is drinking what?
Big old mug of water.
Wow, we are a party.
We're it's like my college days all over again.
A big old Sword and Laser party. So Nick, like I mentioned, of course, you know, you are an author. And tell us about your book, Dying Is My Business.
Well, Dying Is My Business is an urban fantasy noir hybrid about a thief who works for a Brooklyn crime syndicate who discovers that he can't die, or rather he can't stay dead. He gets shot a lot in the line of work that he's doing, and always sort of wakes up again a couple of minutes later, fully healed of his wounds. But the downside to that is every time he cheats death, someone else has to die in his place. So he still tries to avoid getting killed if he can.
Wow, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I think so. And it takes place in contemporary New York City, which is something that I really enjoyed writing about, because I've lived here most of my life, and I really... I liked being able to use a lot of the landmarks and places that I know personally in the book.
And then you don't have to do all that historical research or come up with crazy sci-fi Brooklyn.
Or draw a map.
Right. The maps are all drawn for you. That's brilliant.
Exactly.
Such a time saver. Now, there's also a sort of a ragtag team of people out searching for things. I don't want to give too much away. But it reminded me a little of sort of a dark, gritty Warehouse 13 type group.
I've heard that too.
Are you a fan of that show?
Never seen. It's about people who go out and collect like magical or dangerous items.
Yeah, there are called artifacts in that universe, but it's not exactly the same. But it's kind of got a similar, like, we need to find the thing that could do bad things and protect other people.
Right, right. Well, I can claim it, I suppose, as sort of just an osmosis influence, but I never actually saw the show.
And I was going to say, too, that it also kind of reminds me, this is not a bad thing, of our most recent vaginal fantasy pick, one of the other book club shows that I do. Zoe Archer has a book called Warrior, and in that there's a group called the Blades that also seek out to find dangerous historical artifacts. Mm-hmm. They're magical artifacts. So something like Thor's hammer, the hammer of Thor is like one thing, and it's all different, you know, religions or backgrounds and things like that.
That sounds very cool. And obviously, it's some sort of zeitgeist that must be going on right now, or I don't know, everyone's writing about dangerous things that need to be contained.
Yeah, maybe it is kind of a historical...
It's like our collective consciousness, isn't it? Yeah, you're right.
Right. And then there was another... so is it like a fantasy Bourne Identity in kind of a way?
Yes, actually. There was a review that called it the sort of the Bourne identity with a fantasy kick, and I think that was great because it's a very high octane, very high energy action story, but with magic and monsters and all those fun things.
Right. I think that was Vampire Book Club. Was it Vampire Book Club that said that? Very cool.
So you're going to be calling Matt Damon for the movie version?
Ooh.
I've got him on speakerphone right now.
He's got to be on hold.
He's listening.
Hello, Matt.
Hello.
We ran out of time for Matt Damon. We can steal a Jimmy Kimmel.
Are you guys fans of 30 Rock at all?
Yes. Yeah.
He was amazing on that show. I think that's actually my favorite role of his.
Yeah. It's actually some actors. My favorite role of Jon Hamm is on 30 Rock as well.
He's
it's the same sort of thing. Yeah. No, they're both brilliant. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
So what's in the box?
I can't tell you. The thing that they have to secure, the artifact that they need to secure, is this mysterious box, which is actually called the Van Lente box, after my friend, comic book writer Fred Van Lente.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically the MacGuffin of the piece. They need to find it. They need to get it to a safe place before the autumnal equinox hits. But I can't tell you what's in the box because that's a big reveal.
Well, you wrote a guest post on SF Signal that I thought was pretty interesting.
I really enjoyed writing that one.
Yeah, we're huge fans of SF Signal over here, so you know, big props to them. But you talked a little bit about the idea of the mysterious box and how it seems to it comes around every so often. Why do you think that's such a popular, I don't want to say trope, but such a popular plot point for a story, a fantasy story?
It is a trope. It plays into the whole idea of the MacGuffin, which is the famous thing that Hitchcock came up with. That there has to be an object in the plot that everybody wants and everyone is trying to get. And I think if you have a box, then you get to have a little extra something in there as well, which is whatever it is inside the box. I think it goes back probably to a very early civilization stuff, where you never really quite knew what you were getting when you left the cave. But other than that, I think it's just fun. I think it's just a fun thing. Everybody loves boxes. Everybody loves presents. What's more fun than opening up a box that maybe you're not supposed to?
You know who loves boxes?
Yeah.
Tom? Who? Robert J. Sawyer. Robert J. Sawyer loves boxes. That's an
inside joke for the
certain long terms. That's inside baseball.
I have a question though. Is it a pure MacGuffin, or is it something we might find revealed at some point down the road?
Oh, it's about halfway into the book. They do open the box and it is revealed.
So we can look forward to that.
But it's a super big secret, and I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. Even more reason not to tell us. Yeah.
I guess we'll have to read it. And I see you just sent off book two, Die and Stay Dead, to the editor. So when can we expect that next book in the series to come out?
I think a year from now. I think it'll be next October. And I have my agent to thank for the title Die and Stay Dead.
Nice. And how many books do you plan to have in the series?
It's a funny story. We pitched St. Martin's Press a trilogy, and they gave me a two-book deal. But I end the second book on such a cliffhanger that they have to take the third one. So I'm imagining it as a trilogy, but I think if the demand is there and if it's popular enough, I think I could continue it going past three books.
Gotcha.
How did your agent come up with the title? It wasn't something you'd said to each other or anything.
No.
God, I want you to stay dead, Nick. Jeez.
It was part of a discussion about what to title the first book. The first book originally, Dying is My Business, originally had a different title. And, you know, right up until almost the last minute, it was going to be published as a book called Not Dead Yet. And then we got an email from the editor at St. Martin saying, hey, listen, I didn't realize this, but we are actually publishing another book with that same title.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
By internationally bestselling author Peter James. So would you be interested in changing your title? And so we did. Dying is My Business actually was a title that they came up with at St. Martin's. And I love it because it's a great sort of callback to Raymond Chandler's Trouble is My Business.
Yeah.
And there's a very, very much a sort of mystery noir thing going on with the book. But Die and Stay Dead was actually the title that my agent came up with originally as a replacement. And I loved it, but I thought, well, let's save that one for the second book.
We have a couple questions from our Goodreads audience for you. The first one comes from Alexa. And thanks, by the way, for plugging that thread on your live journal and Twitter and stuff. That was great. Alexa wants to say, good morning. You've created many supernatural creatures in Dying Is My Business. Which would you most dislike to have chase you down a dark alley?
Before I answer this, can I let you in on a big secret?
Yes.
Alexa is my wife.
I was wondering why. I was like, what's so funny about good morning? Is it because it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or where you are, it's 7 o'clock.
So I think it was morning when she wrote the question.
There you go. Good question.
But yes, okay, so to answer the question, there are a number of supernatural entities in the book, and I think the one who's probably the scariest to me is a fellow who goes by the name of the Black Knight, because he's conscienceless. He's super evil, and he also has the ability to kill you just by touching you. He doesn't need to stab you. He doesn't need to shoot you or anything. He just touches you and you die. So I figure that's a pretty scary guy, and I would want to run into him.
We're totally cool with your wife astroturfing our Goodreads forums. That's fine.
Thank you. I'll let her know.
So tell her we say hi.
Spouses allowed to astroturf. Yeah.
Do you also have a wife named Kirsten?
No.
Okay.
No. My other wives have different names.
Okay. All right. Well, Kirsten wants to know, genre fiction has a lot of well-worn and well-loved tropes, which Dying Is My Business does a good job at subverting and reinventing while respecting. How conscious of this are you during your writing process, and what advice would you give to other writers looking to walk this same fine line?
I was very conscious of it. I love horror, I love dark fantasy, I love urban fantasy, and I'm very familiar with all the tropes and the ins and outs of plots and creatures and whatnot. So when I was writing it myself, I wanted to make sure that if I was playing with certain tropes, I wanted to do something a little different with them or a little more original, so that we're not just running into yet another vampire or yet another werewolf or what have you. So I decided to make the werewolf character in the book also undead. He's actually a zombie werewolf, and there's a vampire who is very, he never takes his sunglasses off. He's very sassy, and also with the creatures, I wanted to sort of have more complexity to the villains. So the Black Knight that I was mentioning earlier is actually sort of the king of this race of gargoyles. But the gargoyles are actually a very complicated and complex society. And I wanted to do that just to sort of, I don't know, just to show that it wouldn't be just the same old kind of thing. And I know that I enjoy reading things that are a little bit different, and that's what I wanted to provide as well if I could.
Do you do that on purpose? Do you think of something like that you liked or were very familiar with and say, okay, let me figure out how to turn this on its head? Or is it just kind of a natural progression that bubbles up from the subconscious?
I wish it was natural, but no, there are many times where I was like, well, listen, I wanted to have this character, but I've seen this character a million times before, so what can I do to make him or her different? So I did actually, I put a lot of work and thought into trying to, I don't know, just trying to make it come alive a little more.
Make it new. That's good. You maintain an active presence on a lot of social networks. Do you think this is a job requirement for authors these days, or do you just enjoy doing that?
I don't think it's a job requirement. I know a lot of people who do. I know a lot of authors who do consider it a job requirement. I find being on social media a huge time suck. I know that I used to be on Facebook. I'm not anymore. I was on Facebook for about a year between, I think, 2010 and 2011. And I got so little done. And then once I finally quit Facebook, I was able to write a book and get it published. I feel like maybe social media is not necessarily the be-all.
Cautionary tale, kids, right there.
I know.
Precisely.
I think about that sometimes. You know, I have to say, even sometimes when I'm reading, like maybe it's not a particularly deep kind of book or, you know, just some fun reading. And I'm like, you know, I could be using this time for saving the world some way. Or, you know, while, when I'm playing video games, sucked into something, I always get that sense that I'm not using my time to the best of my abilities.
Use your powers for good, Veronica.
Use my powers for good.
Unless you're spending that time reading Nicholas Kaufman's book, then it's perfectly fine.
I would say that is using your power for good.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been talking a lot about self-publishing recently. It's something that we talk a lot with our audience and with other authors. So what do you think of the self-publishing wave? Who is it for? Who is it not for? Is it something that you've toyed with in the past? What do you think is the future there?
It's not something I've toyed with, but I think it's also not what it used to be. Back before, I mean, I think Kindle has a lot to answer for, in both good and bad. And one of the things it has to answer for is this new wave of self-publishing, which is sort of the direct to ebook publishing. But back in the day, before this happened, before Kindle, there was a lot of POD self-publishing, where people would publish on demand or print on demand. And the problem was always distribution. Like, you would publish your own book, but then you would sell it to your family and your friends, and that would be pretty much it. Ebook self-publishing has gotten rid of the problem of distribution with self-publishing. And so I think that it's actually much more viable than self-publishing used to be even just 5 years ago. So I'm not against it. I was against sort of the POD self-publishing, just because it was a road. I felt it was a road to nowhere.
More like a vanity press era is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, like iUniverse and Ex Libris and stuff like that, where you would pay them to publish your book, basically. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to do that anymore with this sort of ebook self-publishing revolution. It's still not something I'm entirely interested in, just because I feel like I'm doing okay with St. Martin's and I'm enjoying working with them. But it's not something I'm closing the door to either in the future.
Gotcha.
If you were a writer starting out, would you say go ahead and self-publish to get started, or would you encourage people to try to get an agent or a book publishing deal first?
I would definitely encourage people to try to get an agent and a good deal with a traditional publisher first, because there are certain things that a publisher can do for you that you can't necessarily do for yourself. It still does lend, I think, a certain legitimacy to your book. I don't know, for instance, how many self-published authors you've had on Sword and Laser. I don't know if you would have had me on if I were self-published. So I think there is still sort of that legitimacy that comes with working with traditional publishers. At the same time, though, I wouldn't tell anyone not to do it. I think it really depends on what their dream is. If their dream is to be published, or if their dream is to be read, because they're not always the same thing. And I feel like if you self-publish, you still have a chance of not really being read as widely. Gotcha. Does that sound weird? I don't know.
No.
I think a lot of authors have given similar advice, and I think it's good advice to take to heart. It's not, you're not saying self-publishing is evil and avoid it. You're just saying, like, publishers still have a role, and if you can get the advantages of that role, it might be worth it.
I think you can almost even do it the other way and say that, yes, you can get published, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be read. But you can do self-publishing, and, well, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be read, but you could get picked up and have a very fast distribution rate. You could, you know, actually possibly potentially get more readership that way if you are Hugh Howey, I guess.
Right.
It's certainly possible.
Maybe that's the only answer there.
Or Sigler, yeah.
Right. And speaking of advice, besides or instead of just write every day, which is definitely probably the best advice all of our authors give our listeners, what advice do you have for authors just starting out?
Stick with it. It's a stupid job, being a writer. It's a terrible job. But you got to really love it. And I don't know of any other professions out there, except maybe acting, where the sheer volume of rejection is simply part of the job. So you have to be able to handle that, and you have to be able to sort of keep at it. I'm one of those hippy-dippy writers who thinks that every word you write makes you a better writer, even if that word doesn't wind up in the final book. So you really just need to keep at it and keep the juices flowing. It's like, I feel like creativity is a muscle, and the more you use it, the stronger it is. But definitely, it takes a lot of perseverance. I mean, I don't know any overnight successes in this business. I know a lot of people who have been doing it since they were very, very young and only now finding success. I've been writing since fourth or fifth grade. And now I'm in my mid-40s, and this book is out. So you get it takes a while, and you need to stick with it if you want to see your dream happen.
I think
that's great advice.
Definitely the similar advice that we hear, which is you really have to love it. Not only just write every day, but you really have to love it because
you're stuck in a room by yourself too for most of the time.
I guess you have to kind of like yourself and be okay with your thoughts and not be able to give up too much.
I don't know any writers who like themselves.
Whole different thing.
Yeah. Well, Nick, thank you very much for joining us on the show. Where can everyone follow your work online?
Oh, it was a pleasure, you guys. I'm so happy to have been here. They can check out my website at nicholaskaufman.com. Kaufman has two N's at the end. If you go to nicholaskaufman.com with one N, I don't know what you'll find. I'm also on Twitter as The Kaufman because everything else was taken. And I'm on Google+ as well, but don't look for me on Facebook because I hated it.
Oh, no.
Did you actually delete your account or just?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I was only on it for a year and I don't know. I didn't get into it at all. It wasn't for me.
Gotcha. By the way, Nicholas Kaufman with one N is unregistered.
Quick, put up some porn or something.
On that, redirect.
Do a redirect on that. Yeah.
I should actually. Yeah.
And forgive me for mispronouncing your or not saying that your last name the way that you obviously prefer it said. It's a running joke on the Sword and Laser community that I butcher everyone's names. So don't feel.
I've heard my name pronounced so many different ways I don't even notice anymore.
All right, don't feel bad.
I don't.
It's not you, it's me.
Please don't feel bad either.
Yeah. And if you guys want to follow along with
Sword
and Laser,
don't be mad at Veronica.
How would you even mispronounce that?
I don't know.
Veronica. I like that. Yeah, that's kind of exotic sounding.
I guess so.
Veronica. And of course, if you want to follow with us, the web address is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on goodreads.com. And if you want to leave us some feedback, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.